Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. We have two lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And before the break there, the last caller was... I was not quite understanding what he was asking, but he was asking about creating a recovery partition or a recovery thumb drive from his new computer that he has. And he was kind of asking about the size of the thumb drive that you need and what they recommended. And he was asking why he should do it. And the answer is you should do it if you want to be able to get back up and running after a hard drive crash. Do hard drives crash? Yes, constantly. We have 6,000 plus systems that we watch. You want to know how many hard drives crash in a week? They crash. So you only have one computer maybe in your home or two, and the chances of your hard drives crashing might be less because you have so few computers, but they crash. So do the recovery.
Well, the one thing about hard drives you got to understand is all hard drives fail.
All of them.
Just a matter of when.
Exactly. Either due to a mechanical issue, a power issue, some sort
they
of...
They wear out.
They wear out. They're going to crash. So do your recoveries when you get your new computer. Get the little thumb drive, and then you'll be able to recover your operating system, and you'll be able to replace the drive under warranty or buy a new one. Take your recovery stick, put it back in, and it'll reinstall. That's kind of a beautiful thing.
You want to know a secret?
Sure.
The good ones are only guaranteed to last 3 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they last longer, but,
yeah.
You know.
Most warranties are even 1 year. But, yeah, with Tab computers, we always warranty them for three, along with our servers. But things fail, so you need to be prepared for the failure. Let's go on to your calls. We're going to go to Paul in Bristol next. Morning, Paul.
Good morning. I'm back again.
What's up?
It's the same thing. I'm the one to ask about the recovery. Irrelevant to me whether or not a drive is more likely to fail, whether it's an SSD or a hard drive. And both my new computer and my sister's new computer, mine is just basically an SSD, and my sister's has a 1 terabyte hard drive and a 128 gig SSD, which I encouraged because I think it's nice to start up nice and quick and shut down quick.
So the answer is all drives fail, whether they're solid state or not. The higher the chances, we couldn't tell you. There's not really data on that I could give you. I would just tell you to expect something to fail in your computer, whether it's solid state or not. Whether it's a power issue, a virus infection, a ransomware infection, it's good to have a backup because you're going to have some sort of failure.
Okay, so the basic thing is when you do the recovery disk, which I've always done.
Yep.
This will be the first time I'm doing it with a jump drive. Now, it's not loading any software on it or anything. It's just the parameters of the operating system and the hardware in the computer. Is that what's put on there?
It'll depend on each manufacturer. But
yeah, it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing a recovery disk, you can do a recovery disk where it'll do give you the ability to basically restore it to factory.
And which we have the operating system.
Which is something you really want to do, but you set that one aside in case the system fails and you need to replace a hard drive.
Right.
And then the other thing you do is like a full system backup, which I would recommend.
Right.
So, after the software is installed on that one.
Correct.
Right. Now, the other thing, should I use the regular Windows? Should I download something like Macrium?
I've not used Macrium before. I like ESUS or EaseUS as a way to do a backup. But you can use whatever you're comfortable with. Understanding this, the backup is created within the actual language of the backup. So for some people, they could be comfortably backing up all day long because you just configure it and you walk away. The pain comes in understanding how to restore. And for a lot of folks, it can be really painful. So doing simple copies and pastes with simple batch files, X copies, that'll just copy the files as are, you know, your pictures, you know, everything that's important to you, sometimes gives you a much faster recovery because you're not dealing with software you haven't touched in 4 years, let's say. You've got it backed up for 4 years, you've never touched it, and now you got to recover a whole image. I guarantee you, you're going to sit there and say, where do I start?
That's a good point. Quickly, though, and those other people, my sister's computer, she has Xfinity. I'm heading back to Florida in another month,
mm-hmm.
and she's got Xfinity, and I loaded Norton Internet Security on her for free because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's more robust than Windows Defender.
Mm-hmm.
Would you still recommend OpenDNS?
Yes.
Okay.
Always. That's pretty much our default.
I don't care what you do, do that. It's crazy. My sister's got a Seagate 3-terabyte USB backup drive.
Mm-hmm.
I installed in 2013. It went loaded in with 1.4 gigabytes of material.
Yeah.
There's been 20,000 incremental backups since then.
Nice.
Stopping in November of 2015 for some unknown reason.
Mm-hmm.
And have you heard anything about when Windows 10 was put on a machine, whether or not, because I saw something where Seagate had an older version of their backup software, and they're saying that they want version 4 plus on Windows 10 machines, because I got a whole bunch of incremental folders that show nothing in them.
Yep. So here's the other problem, Paul, with backup. Your software upgraded, right? And now the backup stopped working, but you think it's working.
Yeah.
And that's the nature of IT. This is our bane of our existence, and this is why we lose sleep at night, making sure our customers' data is always backed up.
Explain to me how to fix this?
Say that again?
Is this where you explain to me how to fix this and get all those incremental backups to show material?
I would tell you, Paul, who cares? You're going to lose that string. Those incrementals, if they've been going on for as long as they have blank, it doesn't matter. What you're going to do is start over, get a fresh image as it looks now, understanding you're going to lose the ability to go back in time to grab a potential file, and you're going to start over with fresh software or updated software. You cannot try to waste your time to reproduce those incrementals that never occurred. You can't really do that.
Well, this is one thing that's crazy about this. It's very... Mm-hmm. And it's kind of frustrating. When I take a look at the drive and I look at the overall properties of the drive, it's 3 terabytes.
Yeah.
It says there's 980-something gigabytes used.
Okay.
Yet the only file I can find is the first initial install, where there's 1.4 gigs. I mean, how does it install 900 more gigs and not show any incrementals?
Because your backup is an image file. And what happens with the image file is when it does an incremental, it only backs up what's changed.
Yes.
So it adds it to that file.
And but I can't find a 900 gigabyte file in the tree when I open it.
It may not be a file. It might be an incremental chunk that is in multiple chunks. So here's the thing too. You can back up blank space. So when you're doing an image backup of a 4-terabyte server that only has 500 megs of data on it,
yeah.
That image will take up 4 terabytes even though it's empty space. So it's like taking an entire warehouse and having a couple things in the corner, and you're putting it in that same space even though it's empty.
It's like a bitmap with one dot in the middle.
It could be, yeah. But in your case,
you know what I'm saying, though. I mean, your bitmap's taking the whole thing. And
exactly. With one little pixel. In your case, I would tell you to start that backup again. And here's the problem with backup. If you don't check to make sure you can have one or do a restoration, it's as useless as not having one.
Do a test restore. More frequently, the better.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, Paul. Thanks for calling.
I understand. Thank you so much. I'll be listening back in Florida in another month or so. And
we'll be all jealous of you.
Well, you know, it's nice. Let's put it that way.
I know it is. All right. Well, good luck, Paul.
Thank you for your help. I appreciate it.
Our pleasure. Bye-bye. All right. Let's move on to Ted in Cheshire. Hey, Ted.
Hey. Good morning.
Morning.
I I'm calling because we were listening to another program on TIC, mm-hmm. the Clark Howard program.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the things he said was get yourself an inexpensive laptop and run, pay your bills and do all this thing, these things so that you're not conflicting with surfing and all this other stuff that can allow people to get into your accounts if you're not careful.
Yeah, so he's telling you to buy a laptop for just that purpose.
Right.
Yeah.
And my question is, we were running around and I happened to see a, I can't even remember if it was an HP or something else, but it had a Celeron processor, which I, from my recollection, is an older processor at, from Intel.
Yeah, your refrigerator probably has more horsepower, processing power than a Celeron, but go ahead.
So, and that's what I was thinking, was such an old processor, and that had a lot to do with why it was so inexpensive.
Yes.
So my question is, what would you, given the what's out there in the market, what would you suggest?
For what you're doing, for online payments and stuff like that, with just that one laptop, and you promise, you swear to never use it for anything else, you swear...
That's the point.
I know it's the point, but you swear you're going to do it?
Well, we have two other computers. So
all
right. I don't see why we should have to go do that.
Because you've got grandkids or kids, you come in there and they say, hey, Ted, can I borrow a laptop? And you're like, your wife goes, okay, here's this one. You got to put a padlock
right
on
now.
It. Okay, all right. I'm just saying, make sure you don't use it for anything else. But I guess my recommendation would be an i3 would be fine for a very inexpensive laptop to just do what you're asking it to do.
Okay, so HP or any you're saying any
yeah, it doesn't
reputable
matter.
Brand with an i3 processor?
Yeah, for just what you're asking it to do. You're asking it to do very little. You're doing online payments, right?
Yep.
Online banking. You're going to still need OpenDNS. You're going to still need antivirus. And make sure that thing is turned off and not used for anything else if you're going to do online banking or anything. But I agree with Clark.
Yeah.
Don't.
Well, yeah, he was saying run all your finance, anything you do financially, run it with just a like he was saying, like you were saying, an independent computer that you don't do anything else with.
Right, that is quote unquote air gapped, meaning you can turn it off, and it won't be sitting there doing anything in the background like updates and reaching out to the internet saying, "Hey, I need to be checked out here." He's right. It's a dangerous world out there, and you end up surfing and get a keylogger on there where someone's capturing your account password and your account number and your password, and someone else is transferring your money to other places.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay, so any reputable brand with an i3 processor?
Yeah, it's all you need. You don't need a whole lot because you're not going to do a whole lot with it.
No. It's just keeping track of finances and stuff. Yeah. Could we run, I'm not even sure what, just to keep track of what we're paying, like if it was a checking account or something like that.
Like an Excel spreadsheet or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, you could do that. I mean, i3s are not that powerful either, but you can do that with that laptop.
Okay.
All right, Ted.
Thank you very much.
Now, good luck.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, Clark Howard, I love listening to Clark Howard. He's awesome. We're going to step out for a quick break. Three lines open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Danny, hang on. We'll be right back. We are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And we're here till 11. So kind of creep you out or freak you out further with technology. I don't mean to do this, but we did bring up this malware in the past. And there's a new story out. Let me get my glasses on. I'm going to put my glasses on. Can't believe I got to put glasses on. FBI solves mystery surrounding 15-year-old fruit fly Mac malware. So way back when, we've talked about this because, of course, everybody knows apples don't get malware. They don't get viruses, right, Bob? Didn't the guy at the fruit stand tell you, the geniuses over there tell you that apples don't get viruses?
They're bulletproof.
Well, so here's the sad story. The FBI solved the final mystery surrounding a strain of Mac malware that was used by an Ohio man to spy on people for how many years? 14 years. 14 years this guy was spying on people. The man, now 28-year-old Philip Durachinsky, was arrested in January of 2017 and charged a year later in January 2018. The U.S. authorities say he created the fruit fly Mac malware. He created it back in 2003 and used it until 2017 to infect victims and take control of their Mac computers and do what? Steal files, steal your keyboard strokes, watch you via the webcam, and listen to you via the microphone. This guy wasn't particularly interested in financial crime, but was primarily focused on watching his victims, having collected millions of images on his computers, including many of course, underage children. So he's a disgusting person on top of being a computer criminal. He created the malware when he was 14 years old and used it for the next 14 years without the Mac antivirus programs ever detecting it on victims' computers. The first known detection, at least according to court documents, was in early 2017 when the FBI in Cleveland was called to investigate a malware incident at the Case Western Reserve University. The FBI investigators found the fruit fly malware on the university's computer systems, and the trail eventually led back to this guy, resulting in his arrest. I'll put the link up here for you. The moral of the story is, well, I'll tell you how he got into the system. So what he did was he was using something called port scanning. So you being an Apple Mac user figured nobody would ever hack your system, and you made your Apple Mac available for remote access to be maybe remote controlled or, you know, what have you, and your port was wide open. And because, of course, you thought your Apple Mac could never be hacked of any kind, your password was something like password or something really basic and simple. And he then used the fact that your passwords were weak and got into your Apple device remotely and loaded the software. You need to make sure you have strong passwords, period. Password of password is not a strong password. So I'll put the link up here for you. I know somebody told you your Apple device couldn't be hit with anything, but this guy was hiding out for 14 years watching you do everything on your device if you happened to be hit with this malware. And who knows what he was watching you do. So even in the last caller, who is worrying about doing online banking and only going to use his computer at those moments, it's not a guarantee that you're safe. Sorry to say it, but it's true. I'll put a link up here for you. Not meaning to freak you out, but the easier you make moving money around, the higher the chance somebody's going to move it into their account.
The only guarantees are death and taxes.
That's true. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock, so stick around. Danny and Glastonbury, we got three lines open for you. We're here for another half an hour on this gorgeous Saturday morning, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. Everything we've talked about will be posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show, which also works, the name of the show.com. If you go to Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg deems our news worthy, you have to like us at Tab Computer Systems. And maybe, just maybe, it'll get into your Facebook news feed. And, of course, if you follow us on Twitter over at Tab Computer Sys, while you're following everything else on Twitter, I have no idea how you have any time to follow us, too. It'll get into your Twitter feed. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Dr. Alessi is going to be in next at 11, and he'll give you some second opinion on your health advice. But feel free to get online. We have three lines wide open. I know it's a gorgeous Saturday morning. Maybe you're in Southington at the Apple Harvest, which is awesome. The fritters are flying off the shelves, flying out of the booth. They can't make them fast enough. That thing is a money-making machine, and it goes to a good cause. But feel free to stop by there. But right now, we're here till 11 to help you out with your computer problems, questions. And let's go to our resident groupie, Danny. Hey, Danny.
Hey, guys.
What's up?
I got an email last week on my Gmail.
Yeah.
It's got a little circle with a G in it, and the bold print, it says Gmail, and it says you're not using the official Gmail app.
Right.
Gmail app to the Gmail update to get the official Gmail app and improve your service. Switch now.
Mm-hmm. It's
and
up to
I
you.
I looked at my, in my apps, and I do have the Gmail app. So that's not Gmail, probably?
No, it is. You can use that app. What you're using for your email might be the little red M.
Yep.
And they want you to go and use the little G.
Oh, okay. So they've upgraded it.
It's a marketing thing, yeah. Your choice. You can do it or not.
Uh-huh.
It's up to you.
And this thing with Chrome, logging in with Chrome, I haven't had to do that.
Because you're already logged in as Danny from Glastonbury. They already know who you are, where you're going, what you're searching, what you're doing.
So I'm already under the microscope,
Yeah, you're on the Googleplex.
Okay.
Hey, how are you doing with Elon?
Oh, he's in trouble.
I wasn't sure if you were going to talk about it today or not.
No, I was going to. The boy got a bad head.
Yeah. He might.
You know, that deal the SEC offered him was, like, incredibly lenient.
Of course it was.
But, you know, he said that he did have money from the Saudis, and he thought that he did have a deal, and they wound up going with the that car called Lucid, the company called Lucid that makes another EV car.
Yeah. Well, it's good to have ink on paper before you say something to affect the stock.
Instead of a verbal agreement.
Yeah. So I'm sorry to hear he's going through so much trouble. You know, there's a Market Insider report talking about the speed with which the investigation was opened was surprising. I don't think it's surprising. We have subsidized over 200,000 Tesla vehicles to the tune of $1.5 billion in tax dollars to people buying $80,000 and $100,000 vehicles. I think we should go after him if he's going to play around.
I hate that whole government subsidy for things like that, even though I love him.
Yeah.
You know, I've been conflicted all along. Like, he got a ton of money that saved him with SpaceX from Obama.
Mm-hmm.
He bailed him out on that.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Why does he get to be the winner? There's plenty of smart guys out there.
Yeah, but not as smart as him. That's a joke. Well, he's too smart.
Is he?
he's
funding
so
secured 420. Wasn't that smart?
He's so smart, he's dumb.
Mm.
He needs to pick better girlfriends, too.
Maybe that will. That could probably happen to a lot of folks.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Thanks a lot.
All right. Thanks, Danny. Hopefully things go okay for Mr. Musk. I'm not wishing him any ill will, but funding secured 420 was probably not the smartest thing he ever said on Twitter. You should take away his Twitter account.
Well, was that after he was doing the
with Joe Rogan? I don't think so. I think it might have been before. So what do you get, Bob? We're waiting for your calls, guys. Feel free to get online. We have four lines wide open, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. What do you got?
Well, we got elections coming around the corner, right?
I hear we do.
Okay. Well, did you know that 26 states, over half of U.S. states, are using voting machines with a known vulnerability, says report?
You're kidding.
This is a CNET article.
Half of the states that we have out there using these voting machines have a known vulnerability.
Election machines used in 26 states and D.C.
Of course, D.C.
remain vulnerable to a cybersecurity flaw that was disclosed in 2007, according to a new report.
In 2007?
Yeah, 2007. That's 11 years ago.
It sounds like how our DMV backs up their software.
Well, you know
but go
how
ahead.
Fast Congress moves.
Yeah, it's true. Holy moly.
It only moves fast if there's something negative.
Yeah. All right. Well, 2007. Okay.
The vulnerability in the Model 650 ballot counting machine made by Election Systems and Software was among several outlined in a DEFCON report released Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The report, based on research on this year's cybersecurity conference, called on Congress to regulate basic security standards of the machines. A flaw in the Model 650's update procedures posed a security risk, according to the report, and was previously identified in a report commissioned by Ohio's Secretary of State in 2007.
Jeez.
While the 11-year-old flaw requires physical access to the machine, the researchers also found that hackers can gain access to the ballot counting machines remotely and hack into them within 2 minutes.
Oh, my gosh.
The base-level security protections on the M615 are not as advanced as the security protections that exist on the voting machines ESNS manufacturers today.
Mm.
Because we discontinued manufacture of those units early 2008, ESX spokesperson Jill Register said in an email statement, although we believe that the security protections on the M650 are strong enough to make it extraordinarily difficult to hack in a real-world environment, and therefore safe and secure to use in an election.
Interesting.
Only 2 minutes to hack in, but
safe and secure. Here in Connecticut, and you know, you might find ballots in your trunk from Bridgeport anytime, no matter what tool you use. So I'm not sure it matters. But go ahead.
Other voting machines showed vulnerabilities at DEF CON before as well. It was reported in July 2017 that advanced voting solutions, WinVote machines, were used in Virginia until 2015, even though the company went out of business in 2007 for lacking security.
You're kidding. You're not kidding. I know you're not kidding.
It's in here. I'm just reading it verbatim.
Oh, my gosh.
Hackers try to find security flaws in voting machines at the Voter Hacking Village at DEF CON every year.
That's fun. All right. Okay. So we'll put a link up here for you guys. So
it's fun to read these things.
It's scary.
You can't make it up.
No. You can't make it up. I wish we were, but we can't. So we'll put a link up here for you. And, you know, as with everything with the government, as our bridges are crumbling, they're saying, hey, by the way, our bridges are crumbling. Oh, yeah. You noticed? Oh, what did you do with the money? Oh, well, that's a whole other story. Let's go to Joe first in Berlin. Our lines are all jamming up. What do you got, Joe?
Earlier, somebody called about trying to connect to a printer port, parallel printer port from their USB.
Yes, sir. They're trying to connect an old zip drive to do it.
Yep. Okay. There is an outfit called USB Gear.
Sure.
That makes all these converters.
Yep.
And I would strongly recommend them going directly to their website.
Cool.
Companies making they're labeled identical. They look identical.
Yeah.
You get them on eBay, but they don't work.
Right. You've had good luck with this one.
Absolutely.
USB Gear.
The name of the company is USB Gear. Go right to their website.
And we'll put it out there, Joe. We appreciate
$15-$20, and you can. You'll be all set and running.
That sounds great. Hopefully that works for him. I appreciate the call.
Okay.
Thanks, man.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Yeah, there's tons of stuff out there that you can try. You know, we go to – I like StarTAC. They're a good site to get good technology interfaces as well. Let's go on to William from Hartford. Morning, William.
Good morning.
What's up, sir?
My question involves Yahoo email.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly, a couple of months ago, all of our inbound emails arrived in almost all of our inbound emails arrived into the trash mailbox.
Oopsie.
Occasionally, we get one into the regular inbox. Somebody told us if we went to Yahoo settings, we could correct that, and we can't find a setting to reset to correct it. Do you have any ideas?
Hmm. No, I don't use Yahoo, however. You can set up specific folders to do this. You might have done it by accident. I see a post right here. Solved. Incoming email goes to trash. This is from the Yahoo community. And we can put the solution up here to see to walk you through it.
That's what we did, and we found out we should go into settings.
Yeah, that's what we did, and we're supposed to go into settings. We couldn't find a setting to reset, but we'll look at that post.
Yeah, check Popper IMAP settings in any installed email client. So the question is, are you using a client to get your email, or are you using the web to browse your email? Which are you using? When I say a client, are you using a software tool to read your email, or are you using a browser?
A browser.
Okay, so that may not work on the Popper IMAP settings.
And by the way, this happens in the Yahoo account, whether it's an Apple device or a PC.
Yeah, so it's on the account side. It's on the Yahoo side that you might have an issue here.
It appears to be, yes.
Yeah, so you have to go to check your filter. So here it says hover over the gear icon, which is in your Yahoo mail when you're browsing, and check the filters. See if any filter was added that moves to the trash. That's where you would find it. So if you hover over the gear while you're in the Yahoo Mail settings, check to see if you've got anything that's been set to move to the trash. That might be where it changed. But we'll put a link up here for you. You can see what this guy said to do. And you got a confirmation from folks that it solved the issue.
Perfect. Thank you. I got a second quick question. What's the best router modem to replace the high-priced, low-tech Comcast gear?
Well, you have to buy two separate devices. You have to buy a modem, and you have to go to like Staples or Best Buy and buy an actual Comcast compatible modem, and that'll cost you $50
or less.
And then you need to get a firewall router, which would be something from Cisco Linksys, ASUS. There's a ton of them out there. You can do some comparisons. I haven't looked lately to find the quote-unquote best one. That's all relative. But if you go to places like CNET or PCMag to see how they rate or rank some of these other firewall routers, you can get a good feeling for what other folks have used. I use a Linksys, Cisco Linksys device in my home. It's getting a little older now, a couple of years. It's still a good router. It's a 1900 ACS you can
and
look at.
And those items will, the modem that also handles a phone over the cable?
So you're still one of those guys, huh? So no, you may have trouble with that. And that's kind of why they bundled this for you. This is how they force you to pay for the modem. They've bundled your phone service into it, and you only can get it to work if you have a modem that can handle the phone line. And then you get to rent it from them. And that's why it adds $12 a month to your costs, right? So you can ask yourself, do you really still need a landline? Do you have a cell phone?
Oh, yeah.
So you have cell phones.
But we also have a security system that's tied into the landline.
There it is. So you still need a landline. So they've kind of got you with that bundling. They've kind of said to you, well, William, you want what we got. It's going to cost you $12 to rent this modem every month, even though you don't want it.
even though it's low grade.
Yeah, or you consider a different way to communicate with your security folks. I'm sure they offer cellular.
Yes, they do. There's some kind of a essentially built-in cell phone into the system.
Yep, so you could...
another 12 or so bucks.
Yeah, you're going to pay somebody. Yep.
Pay me now, pay me later.
Yep. But that's your problem. So I don't think you're going to find one that's going to support the phone line.
Okay.
If you've got it bundled in there.
All right. Thanks.
All right, William.
Yep. Bye.
Bye-bye. We're going to step out for a quick break, get back to your calls. John and Paul, hang on. This is Computer Talk. We'll be right back. And we are back. Thank you for joining us on this lovely Saturday morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab, and we're going to take your calls right to the top of the hour here. We're going to go right to them. And Dr. Lessie is in the green room getting ready to go for Healthy Round, so stick around for that. If you missed anything on our show, of course, you can go to the podcast over at WTIC. Our show is podcast weekly, so probably sometime Monday or so, or maybe even Tuesday, that podcast will get posted, and you can go back and listen to whatever we talked about and maybe some of the answers we gave. And it goes back many, many months, so you never miss a show. Let's go on to John in East Longmeadow next. Morning, John.
Good morning, gentlemen.
What's up?
I have a question. Is there a way to get I want to move a bunch of pictures off of my phone to my computer.
Okay.
And I thought I could just plug in a USB cable into the PC and into the phone and find them and move them over.
It's not as easy as it used to be.
I know. What do I have to do?
What do you have for a phone? Is it Android or Apple?
Android.
Okay. Yeah. So Google, in all of its wisdom, is especially with newer phones, sticking everything in the cloud. Not as much as being stored locally, but there is a process you can follow, and it's a little more painful. I'm very disappointed in how Google is approaching this for folks. There is a process, though, you can follow to add the phone as a USB drive. I need to kind of know the make and model of your phone to help me make sure we find a good answer for you, because it seems to be different amongst different makes and models of phones, because they all want your data.
Yeah.
So okay, what is it?
It's a Moto G. It's a $79 phone.
That's
I
okay.
Remember
so it's a Moto G. Yeah. And you want to get the data, get the files off of it.
Right.
All right. So we get to find a good answer for the specific Moto G. Yep, we've got some answers here for you. I assume you have the cable that was supplied for the USB cable from
yeah.
The
main. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're going to give you step by step. We'll put some links up here for you as to how to do it. And you'll have to follow those steps. Specifically, you're going to have to put it in you might have to put the device in a debug mode as far as the USB port is concerned, and it'll then finally be seen by your computer, and then you should be able to browse over and copy the files. But it won't be that simple, but it won't be that hard either if you get the instructions. But it is more frustrating than it used to be.
I'll follow that on the...
Yeah, on the old website.
On the website. Okay, I have another quick question.
Okay.
My MP3 player, which I take to the gym every time I go, and I listen while I'm on the treadmill, whatever.
Yeah.
It's 5, 6, 7 years old. I think I've dropped it one too many times, and
sure.
It's failing.
Yep.
It's failing. Is there a way of putting downloaded MP3 files that I've got off of iTunes or wherever of putting them onto the phone? Would that, with this process about taking stuff off, would it let me put stuff back on?
It will. It's going to be painful too, though, because everyone wants you to do it through their ecosphere. You know, you're going to have different players. They're going to look for different files in different places on the phone. But the general answer to your question is yes, you can move files that way. You then have to tell the software you're going to use to play the file where it is. It's not going to be as easy as it used to be.
Maybe you should go buy another MP3 player.
That's what they want you to do, and they want you to play within their ecosphere and get everything from them. It's really getting crazy. I'll put the link, though, as far as how to move data. You can try it the other way and see if it can work for you, John.
Thank you very much.
You got it, sir. Thanks for calling.
Have a good one.
Yeah, you too. I want to thank everybody for joining us on this Saturday morning. Thank you, Matt, for producing. Thank you, Mike G, for posting everything live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. Or if you like Tab Computer Systems on Facebook, it'll get into your news feed. Or you can follow us at Tab Computer Sys on Twitter. And have a great day.
See you next time.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.